Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, one of the critical needs we've heard from governors and public health officials across the country, ventilators. Coronavirus attacks a patient's respiratory system, and ventilators can be essential in supporting healthy breathing. A University of Miami pulmonologist is studying a new treatment that could reduce the need for ventilators, if proven successful on a large number of patients. Dr. Roger Alvarez is exploring the use of nitric oxide therapy. Don't worry, we'll explain that in a moment. Dr. Alvarez, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
You regularly see COVID-19 patients both at the University of Miami and Jackson Hospitals. I wanted to get a sense of who you see, though. Who are these patients? Young, old, more male, more female? What could you tell me?
Well, in general, I can only speak directly to my experience, but it largely matches what you're hearing in the media reports throughout the nation, which is to say a broad spectrum of patients. They tend to skew older and with comorbidities, but we definitely have younger patients as well. And the younger patients mostly have comorbidities, but not all. We have some otherwise healthy patients. And yes, it's true that men do seem to be affected more seriously with the disease, although we do have women who have been admitted as well.
And of course, you know, some of those earlier reports were that this hit elderly a lot more, a lot more than younger patients. But we've also seen that patients of many ages have passed away because of this. And I wondered, you know, the severity of the virus, how that differs from patient to patient that you've seen.
Well, I think that it's still true that older patients are more likely to succumb to the COVID disease caused by the coronavirus. They're more likely to die from it, especially with comorbidities. But because the disease is becoming so widespread, despite the fact that if you're older, you're more likely to get critically ill, if enough young people get ill, then a small percentage will be critically ill. And I think that's what we're seeing.
So I want to talk about this treatment that you tried. It's nitric oxide. But first, we have to understand how the virus impacts our respiratory system. How does COVID-19 attack the lungs?
Well, I have to tell you that we are still learning more and more every day around the country and around the world about how this disease is somewhat unique. But like other respiratory viruses, the coronavirus that causes COVID enters through the lining of the respiratory system. So the respiratory system starts in your nose, your nasal passage, goes all the way down into the lungs, into the small sacs of air called alveolus. And it gets into the lining, reproduces there. Initially, before you get an immune system response, it really reproduces very rapidly. And then after being in your upper airway for a while, several days later, descends down into your actual lungs, and where it seems to infect both the lining of the lung, what we call epithelium, and then also the blood vessels in the lung do seem to be affected.
Why does it seem that, you know, or at least what we know, right, that a large portion of people who get it barely ever show symptoms, and some it will be severe?
Right, and the honest truth is we don't entirely know what is the difference between these people. Certainly people who already have heart disease and lung disease have always been at higher risk from complications from infections in general, just because their bodies are a bit weaker, their organs are you know, in rougher shape. But there's something about this virus that still does affect some younger people and not others. And it's true that the vast majority, especially of younger people, will have some will have mild symptoms and others will have moderate symptoms where they feel pretty crummy, but don't necessarily have complications from it. So it's only a small percentage, but it's when you have enough people get infected, that ends up being a lot of people.
So when you have those severe COVID-19 patients, why are ventilators often needed?
So when this virus attacks the lung, it is causing what is commonly known as pneumonia. That is, there's inflammation and there's fluid accumulating within the air spaces of the lung. This disease also seems to affect the blood vessels themselves in the lung. And so the whole job of the lung to begin with is to bring air into close contact with blood so that we can get the oxygen into the blood. When COVID and other diseases affect the lung in this way, they lose their efficiency at exchanging that oxygen. And so we have to deliver high concentrations. What's been interesting but also concerning about COVID is the degree to which the people have trouble getting enough oxygen. And it requires high doses of oxygen. And sometimes high doses of oxygen are ineffective. As long as your mouth is open, no matter how much oxygen we blow at your face with the traditional devices, like what we call the nasal cannula, the prongs you see in the nose, if you get air from the environment, that only has 21% oxygen, right? So finally, the ventilator is most useful in that you're able to seal the airway and give 100% pure oxygen, and you're able to pressurize it to help pop open any lung areas that have collapsed. And so that's the main reason.
All right. So nitric oxide comes into play now. And right. And we have to be clear, this is very different then, because I know you've probably heard it, right? Very different from nitrous oxide.
Right.
So people
right.
understand the difference between the two.
Yes.
We think of nitrous oxide, that's the what we get when we go to the dentist.
Yes.
Nitric
yes.
oxide, what does it do exactly? How does it help people who, again, are not getting that oxygen?
Well, I'll start by saying that nitric oxide, and thank you for mentioning the nitrous oxide. That's one of my favorite things about being a nitric oxide biologist, is getting to start every conversation with a joke about nitrous oxide and laughing gas. That's a good gimme that I get. So I thank you for planting that. I appreciate it. But you're right. It's not laughing gas. And it's certainly no laughing matter. Forgive the pun. So basically, nitric oxide is made by our bodies in a variety of cells, mostly in our blood vessels. That's the primary place. It's also made by some of our white blood cells. And it has a lot of different functions throughout the body in general. In the blood vessels, it's a signal to the artery, which is basically a tube that's lined by some lining cells that's called the endothelium. And then it's circled around by muscle. And the muscle is what allows the blood vessels to constrict and slow down blood flow, or open up and allow more blood flow. Nitric oxide is one of the most important signals to that muscle to relax and open up to allow more blood flow, right? Nitric oxide as a therapy has been approved for many years by the FDA for the treatment of little babies that have a condition called persistent pulmonary hypertension of the newborn. And it's life-saving therapy for those babies. And it's used around the world as a rescue therapy, meaning when people have severe pneumonia with very low oxygen and they're placed on the ventilator, sometimes even the ventilator is not enough. In that case, we add nitric oxide. And by opening up those arteries in the lung, especially in the areas of lung where the oxygen's being delivered, it brings the blood close to the air, right? More surface area for that, and more oxygen in the blood. So we know that it works for that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what's been done up until now. And then, I'll tell you about what I'm doing that's a little different.
Okay. Again, we're talking with Dr. Roger Alvarez at the University of Miami, a pulmonologist, and he's looking at the efficacy of nitric oxide in treating coronavirus patients. You could read more of the coverage of the pandemic, by the way. Go to WLRN.org/coronavirus. Do you believe, Dr. Alvarez, that nitric oxide could be an effective treatment? Is it a replacement for ventilators or just an addition to?
So it's already being used in addition to. So plenty of centers around the country, including the Massachusetts General Hospital, people in Italy and in China, have used it in addition to the ventilator for people who, despite the ventilator, still can't get enough oxygen.
Right.
That's not been formally studied, but I think most people would agree that it at least brings up, most physicians and intensivists agree that it brings up the oxygen. Now, what I've been trying at the University of Miami is a little bit different than that rescue approach or that in addition approach. So I worked with a sponsor, a company that's engineered a very small device. So mostly inhaled nitric oxide is given in an intensive care unit. It's a massive multiple 100-pound device that requires intensive care unit monitoring. And you guys have heard about, I'm sure, the limitation of intensive care unit beds and staffing, right?
Right.
So what this device has that's different is that it is a small device about the size of a lady's purse that conserves the nitric oxide by delivering it in little pulsed doses, right? So in the beginning of each breath, the device senses that you're breathing and it delivers a small amount, a measured amount of high concentration nitric oxide. So the device is meant to be used at home. So it's extremely simple to use. I have patients on it at home right now, not for COVID, mind you, but for another condition called pulmonary hypertension.
You did try this on a COVID patient.
Yes, and so basically, because I have patients involved in a trial of this device, which is still not FDA approved, but in a trial for pulmonary hypertension, when the COVID pandemic really came to Miami, I was seeing young patients, for example, who were looking okay, except that their oxygen levels were profoundly low. And we were having to place these patients on the ventilator in just for the oxygen. For other parameters, they weren't struggling to breathe, they just couldn't get the oxygen. And so I thought that this would be a great opportunity to try to use this device because this drug, by delivering nitric oxide, has been shown in other cases to improve the oxygen level. And if it was able to improve the oxygen level, could potentially avoid the need for ventilator in
And
those patients who were for whom we were doing it for the oxygen.
this
Hope that makes
patient
sense.
recovered.
Yeah, so the first patient did in fact recover. He was on a disease course that looked like he was going to progress to need the ventilator. He was not needing it yet, or I certainly wouldn't have used the experimental therapy. But I called the FDA and got approval to do what's called an emergency expanded access use. And we gave him the nitric oxide. 5 days later, he was discharged from the hospital on no oxygen.
All right, so
Now,
here's
yes, great.
the and only because of time,
Yes.
the thing is this: how do we know that the therapy worked and this wasn't just a patient who recovered on their own?
Beautiful. That is a wonderful question that I'm so glad you're asking. The reality is, like many other therapies, we don't know, we don't know that that's the reason that he recovered. You're absolutely right. And so when we do therapies like this, there's this effect, we sometimes call the Lazarus effect. Someone looks like they're going to die, we give them a medicine, they improve, we assume it was the medicine. If they die or get worse, we assume that it happened despite the medicine. And the only way we can answer your question is to do a randomized controlled trial. And so that's what I'm currently actively working on today, with support from the University of Miami, who's provided me a small grant to actually do a randomized trial, as well as support from the sponsor, to really learn if this is helping these patients.
And with the trial, what's the sample size you have to have where you could
Yeah.
say, yeah, this is effective, this works, or it doesn't?
That's another great question. It depends on how much it works. So the more a therapy works, the more the degree of effect, the smaller the study you need to see the effect, right? Or to prove it statistically. So what I'm proposing to do first, as an investigator at one site, is to study a small group of patients, 12. And I probably won't be able to see a difference in things like mortality. If we do, that would be incredible, and it would mean the therapy is extremely beneficial. But I'll be looking at things like oxygen, heart function, the need for the ventilator. And if those things show a signal that of significance in the right direction, we'll then roll it out into a larger multi-center trial.
If this is successful, how do you envision it could help reduce the strain on hospitals? Because this is all we keep hearing about now is the
Right.
need for ventilators.
Well, so to the extent that it helps avoid the need for ventilators, that would be great for two reasons. One is the ventilator is not a panacea for this disease. Plenty of patients go on to a ventilator, and as you may have heard, many still don't make it. So avoiding the ventilator entirely would be excellent. And the second thing is because this device is portable and doesn't require special monitoring, it could be started in the hospital. But if people are stable and beginning to improve, they could be discharged with it potentially, and go home with it,
Yeah.
to finish the treatment, unloading the hospitals.
So again, as you said, this right now, it's just about getting this trial set up.
Exactly. Yes, we first need to learn, does it work? And all of those patients will be in the hospital for the duration of their treatment.
And how long will this take? Because as you know, this is all a race to
Yeah.
try to beat this pandemic. How long do you think those trials could take?
Well, I think that when you use outcomes like I'm doing, where you look at the patient's measures of how much they're improving, you can start to get a signal with a small number of patients. And we can do that fairly quickly as long as we have enough support and help. And as long as patients who are sick are willing to participate, given, we're only recommending treatments that we think will be helpful.
Yeah.
And so if we enroll quickly, I think something like a month, we could begin to know an idea of whether this helps in the next 2 weeks to month.
This is so fascinating. Dr. Roger Alvarez, pulmonologist at the University of Miami. You know what? I mean, the best of luck to you, but we're going to keep in touch. I want to see how this plays out.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. All
Definitely.
right. Thank you.
Well, still to come. How how do you get married during a pandemic? A Key West couple finds a solution, and they get help from online strangers. That's coming up next.